Today's story that we hear from the Gospel according to Mark is the story of Jesus and the Syrophoenician woman. And it's also found in Matthew's Gospel. In Matthew's, she is solely identified as a Canaanite woman, and there are a few additional details included in Matthew's version. But in both, we are told in this story that Jesus has departed from the typical stomping grounds of his ministry in the Jewish communities, not far from where he was raised himself. And he and his disciples travel now to the mostly non-Jewish areas nearer the Mediterranean, the Gentile or the pagan territories. And it seems clear that he was not traveling there for the sake of evangelism. A non-Jewish Gentile woman seeks him out and begs him for the healing of her tormented daughter. And Jesus, at first, apparently simply ignores her. In Matthew's version, the disciples are even said to ask her to be sent away. And there is in that version an additional quote of Jesus where he states it's very clear his ministry is to the lost of Israel. In short, he was going to minister to Jews only, people who were like him and his disciples. Gentiles need not apply. Yet, in this story, the woman does not relent. She begs for help. And Jesus, whom we prefer to portray as having a heart and a ministry that includes the marginalized and outsiders, rebuffs this begging woman in a shockingly cold response. It is not fair to take the children's food and give it to the dogs. Karen Lee indicated she was uncomfortable with that passage. And I said, we should all be uncomfortable. Read it so we can share your discomfort. Thank you, Karen Lee. Now, it was not uncommon, apparently, for Jews to call non-Jewish Gentiles, quote, dogs. And we know that every culture has demeaning names that it hurls at those whom it considers outsiders, different or, quote, less than us. Yet even if it was common, there is no getting around it, over it, under it, or avoiding it. Here, Jesus is portrayed at the very best as painfully ethnocentric and, at worst, insensitive or even racist. This may be why we don't like to hear this story in church. Yet this woman does not remain silent. She also doesn't take the bait of his comment. Undeterred, she verbally turns the tables on Jesus in really a quite self-deprecating manner, which is always a tool of the oppressed, isn't it? Sir, yet even the dogs under the table eat children's crumbs. Then Jesus apparently sees her and hears her, seems to get it at least. Let it be done as you wish. In Matthew's version, there is the addition that he in fact commends her for her faith. And she returns home to find her daughter healed and released of the demon. This scene has one of the hardest sayings that we find on the lips of Jesus. We may be accustomed to, we may even appreciate the fact that he gets angry and he has outbursts with the unjust leaders and the systems of his day. We can even understand that he reprimands his disciples for their slowness or their lack of understanding. But this exchange, first to ignore a woman in need and then to respond with, in any age, in any culture, what is a demeaning comment? It is painful and shocking to hear from Jesus. And it is, in fact, astonishing that this portrayal of Jesus is even preserved in the Gospels. Because he's the hero of the Gospels. He is celebrated as a teacher of love, a healer of the excluded, and a savior for all. And the uncomfortableness of this scene actually, according to biblical scholars, tells us that because it is so uncomfortable and does not paint a favorable portrait, there must be a real historical exchange like this that happened. Otherwise, it would not be remembered. The healing of the daughter is accomplished, but Jesus, who only verses before fed 5,000 and walked on water, does not come out of this story as the hero. It is the unnamed Gentile woman. Her tenacity, her words are the climax of the scene. Her emotional strength not to take the bait of an insult, her quick rhetorical skill in this verbal exchange trumps even Jesus himself. And he allows her response to stand unopposed. He doesn't come back. And he can only grant what she has requested. She is the hero of this story. In this case, not Jesus, but she who advances the good news of the gospel. It is one of the most unique, and I find it one of the most compelling stories that we find in the Gospels. Now, scholars also agree that this surely is a story that bears witness to the fact that the barriers that had been established between the Jews and Gentiles were being broken down. It was a long-standing biblical tradition. And it was a very tense and a very lively issue in the early Christian movement because Christianity quickly grew beyond its Jewish roots. So this story reflects the tensions that were there, and it also locates their resolution in the ministry of Jesus, but surprisingly, their resolution and inclusion is not based on Jesus initiating it, but upon this confrontation with a compelling Gentile woman that opened the gospel to even greater possibilities. It would seem that God's plan was bigger than Jesus may even initially have imagined. Now, there are those of us in this room who might identify with the Syrophoenician woman. Maybe because of our personal history, our age, our race, our gender identity, our ability, our sexual orientation. Perhaps we have found ourselves sometimes begging others, maybe even begging God for not, we don't even want a place at the table, just some simple crumbs of grace, please. Arguing and begging for a blessing for ourselves or somebody like us. So if that is ever you, this woman is your patron saint. But the unsettling picture of Jesus remains. Because if we identify with the woman only, we avoid the greater discomfort of identifying with the Jesus whom we claim to follow, who is in this story. I think our avoidance of this Jesus saying is rooted in how much we prefer to perceive Jesus as different from us or the same as us. Now, centuries of theology have proclaimed that Jesus was both fully divine and fully human, but I think we have secretly preferred that he was more divine than he was human. We want to worship and follow an always wonderful, divinely powerful, walking on water, feeding the hungry Jesus, but this story presents us with a very human Jesus that struggled with some of the same unpleasant limitations that we have. Someone who did not get a get-out-of-humanity-free kind of card. He was raised with cultural prejudices, not of his own making. Very likely, he was taught that it was okay to ignore certain kinds of people, maybe that it was common, even acceptable, to call certain people names. Yes, that makes Jesus just a little bit too uncomfortably human, a little too uncomfortably like you and me. And the image that we see in the mirror that Jesus holds up is a little too clear and a little too sharp for our liking. It's important to notice, to pause and point something out, just so it doesn't escape our notice. This story is about a woman of Syrian descent, from a different religion, pleading for the life of her child. This gospel story is, and it is not, 2,000 years old. It's as if the ink on the page is not yet dry. So do we dare to gaze in the mirror held up by Jesus? Do we sometimes begin with the same assumptions that Jesus apparently did? We believe that we know the fullness of what we are called to. This is the community that we serve. This is the scope of our lives. The boundaries are here. The love, grace, and transformation of God's touch reaches this far only. The world and the people beyond that reach, well, we may not call them dogs, well, at least out loud in public mixed company, but our actions betray us. When we claim the good meal for me and my children and people like me, and well, the rest of you are on your own, and if you insist, here are a few crumbs that may drop from our table. The truth will set you free, but first, that's right. Thank you, Charles Donald. The truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. So we in the church are in the season of Lent, that period of spiritual inventory and spiritual preparation for the new life that we proclaim at the Easter resurrection. And this Lent, we're recognizing that not only we as individuals, but our world still remains bound by the spiritual disease of oppression and prejudice. So our theme this Lent, which began last Sunday, the theme is Thou Art Loosed, and it's based on the story, the gospel story that you heard last week, the story where Jesus heals the woman who was bent over for 18 years. Because we need to recognize that the brokenness of the system holds both the oppressed and the oppressor in bondage. The privileged and the marginalized are all held captive, and all must be healed for a new life and a new world to really spring forth. And the gospel story that we hear today reveals that, like Jesus, we are born into a world that has walls, and they're walls not of our own making, walls already erected between different kinds of people. Now, they may be based upon class or race or nationality, religion, gender. The list of how we decide to divide and parse up humanity is endless. But it is rooted in fear. Fear of the other, fear of the different, fear of one who is unlike us. Now, in the extreme, we know that fear by a name, which is called xenophobia. But in daily life, it is our impulse to distrust, to avoid, to hold at bay, to diminish someone different, and to keep that defensive wall in place. This gospel story reveals the question that Jesus was confronted with and the question that we are confronted with, the same question. It is, will our lives and will our choices make the walls higher and stronger, or will we tear them down? Will our lives and our choices make the walls higher and stronger, or will we tear them down? This actually, if you'll notice, turns out to be a gospel story with two miracles: the healing of the woman's daughter and the healing, however small, the healing of the overcoming of prejudice and boundaries that have kept people separate so that God's love and grace can flow freely. Two healings. So a couple more observations. There are always going to be differences. Differences between people, because difference and diversity is woven into God's creation plan. Have you noticed? Difference and diversity is just part and parcel of being part of God's creation. If God had wanted to create us all the same, we would be a race of clones and not this wildly diverse and variegated human race that we are. Hallelujah. I like my own company, but not that much. Our differences will always challenge us then, because we'll always bump up against somebody who is different from us in some way. So first, let us say we should not dismiss the differences as if they do not matter, because the differences do matter. In fact, to erase the differences can lead to even greater harm and greater diminishment of folks. Now, some of you may have heard that Portland Community College in April is going to host what's called a Whiteness History Month. Has anyone heard that? Anyone heard that on the news? Yeah, Portland Community College is going to host a Whiteness History Month. Now, I bet all of you are feeling like, oh, what's all that about? So behind its intentionally provocative title, intentionally provocative, we must say, it is pointing to a very important thing that we need to know, particularly looking around this room, 95% of this room being white. There is great importance in the lifting up and celebrating of Black history, of women's history. The education and the celebration of that cannot be underestimated. However, when that continues to be celebrated against a background of quite literally the white noise, that is celebrated against the background of white noise, it is a silence that whiteness itself is a culture with its own norms and its own limitations. To not say so simply reinforces the assumption that there is history and there is alternate history. There's history, and then there's all the lesser histories that are not worthy or part of history. One gets elevated to the normative standard, and all others are judged less than or inadequate. Anyone here a fan? I'm a fan of the reality series on Sci-Fi called Face Off. Anyone else watch Face Off? I love me some Face Off, yes. So I will admit my taste in television viewing can sometimes be questionable, but we know who we are. We know who we are. Okay, Face Off, if you're unaware of it, I think it's in its 8th or 10th season now, but it is a reality series where makeup artists compete to do different makeup challenges. What? Now, this is not always glamour makeup, by the way. I know that's why you laugh. I know that's what you're... No, that's RuPaul's Drag Race. That's why I love RuPaul's Drag Race. Okay. I said questionable. Okay. Or fantastic. Depends upon your perspective. Okay, there it's good. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. But anyhow, they have a series of challenges of doing different makeups. They could be sci-fi makeups. They could be horror makeups. But transformational makeups. And a couple of weeks ago this season, the challenge was to transform their model, who was a secret agent, to give them a transformation makeup so they would basically be concealed and would not be noticed, so that they could hide their true identity. The winner of that challenge for the hidden identity makeup, the winner was one who transformed their model into being a middle-class, slightly balding white guy in a campground. No, so think about it. Passing unnoticed, because why would you notice someone if they are the default person? Interesting, interesting observation. Differences matter. To erase them means to diminish and dishonor those differences, making one the default and the standard, and all others less. So, second observation. Our differences matter, but the differences need not separate us from one another. In other words, separating people into these are the children and these are the dogs. To use gospel language that we dislike. I'm sure you have heard the story of Professor Laricia Hawkins. She is the professor from Wheaton College, that evangelical college in Illinois, who was discharged because not only did she choose to wear a hijab in solidarity with Islamic women, but she publicly agreed with the Roman Catholic Pope, Pope Francis, by saying Christians and Muslims worship the same God. You've heard that story, have you not? Yes. That is the long and the short of the story. Took them months to get to that, but they dismissed her as a professor of Wheaton because of that disagreement that Christians and Muslims do in fact worship the same God. There are lots of things that could be said about that, but the phobia there is, frankly, Islamophobia, which is one of the most pervasive fears that has infected our nation and, in fact, our religion. Speaking of the Pope, you probably heard that there was an historic meeting last weekend, an historic meeting that happened in Cuba between the Roman Catholic Pope Francis and Patriarch Kirill of Moscow and all of Russia. That's his full title. It is the first time since the great schism between the Roman Church and the Eastern Church 1,000 years ago, the first time the head of the Roman Catholic Church and one of the heads of the Eastern Orthodox Church have met face to face. Talk about holding a grudge. Sorry, I couldn't help it. That just flew out of my mouth. 1,000 years. Now, if you've read their joint statement, I will say it's somewhat disappointing in very many ways. Their joint statement, they find solidarity in excluding some people from the family of faith, indicating that the only real moral family unit is a marriage between one man and one woman. However, we will take the meat and spit out the bones. I remember hearing an interview with Patriarch Kirill, and he quoted an earlier Eastern Orthodox leader, and that was the Metropolitan Filaret of Moscow. And that quote is this: "Our walls of division do not rise all the way to heaven." There is hope in that statement. It's a 200-year-old statement. Our walls of division do not rise all the way to heaven. How often do we forget that the walls that we experience are not walls of God's making? It is a helpful reminder, and it right-sizes all of our prejudices, that whether they are of our own making or inherited, which many of them are, those walls are not God's. How different would our world and our lives be if we did, in fact, act a little bit more like Jesus, and actually like the Jesus in his interaction with the Syrophoenician woman, that we stopped defending ourselves, that we allowed our prejudices and our limitations to rightly be confronted and allowed transformation in. The depth of God's love, the reach of God's healing, is far larger than any of our perceived limits, far richer than any of the crumbs of our cultural expectations and any leftovers that might be hanging around from our personal history. Are we ready for more good news, for more healing to open up in and through us? Whether it started out as our idea or not, it certainly appears to be God's idea.